A Contra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge. Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Contra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. You know, if you're anything like me, when you look at a map or a globe, the world's rivers are just those familiar blue ribbons.
Just lines, right?
Yeah, just lines connecting mountains to the sea. Maybe you see a few dramatic loops, a delta, and then you move on.
And that right there is the huge oversimplification that we're going to be confronting today. Our source material draws heavily from Nick Middleton's profound work, especially Rivers, Architects of Civilization and Planetary Health.
Ah, okay.
And our mission, really, in this deep dive is to just completely shatter that two-dimensional view.
So we're not just looking at a line on a map. We're going to try and understand the river as a four-dimensional dynamic system. And this is where it gets really interesting.
It really does.
Yeah.
Because Middleton's central argument is, well, it's timely and it's incredibly urgent. He says that rivers are the fundamental architects, not just of our landscape, but of our actual civilizations.
Earth's vital circulatory system. I like
it. It's the perfect metaphor. And in an era where we face, you know, unprecedented environmental pressure, our future survival depends on fundamentally shifting our relationship with these waterways.
So moving away from just seeing them as a resource.
Exactly. We have to stop seeing them as something to be exploited and start seeing them as, well, living systems that need active stewardship.
That's a powerful way to frame it right from the start. Okay, so before we dive into the specific arguments, let's get a handle on who is guiding us here. Who is Nick Middleton?
So Middleton is a professor of physical geography at the University of Oxford. He's also a fellow of St. Anne's College, and his academic focus isn't narrow at all. It covers climatology, environmental change, and really critically for us, the interactions between human society and the environment. That mix of hard science and historical awareness is what makes his analysis so compelling.
That human angle is everything, isn't it? I mean, you can't discuss the Tigris and Euphrates without talking about the birth of agriculture in the first cities.
Precisely. And what makes his perspective so distinctive and, you know, so accessible is his field work. It's extensive. We're talking research in over 50 countries.
Wow.
Yeah, the Arctic, rainforests, deserts. He really gets how different civilizations and climates handle the same basic challenge of water.
And he knows how to tell a story.
Yeah.
He's known for translating these incredibly complex geographical concepts, you know, things like fluvial geomorphology, into narratives that you actually remember. He's done work for the BBC, so he has the communication skills.
He does.
I find the way he blends that rigorous science, like how a river moves sediment, with a genuine appreciation for the cultural and spiritual side of it,
yeah,
what he calls sacred geography. That's what I find really compelling.
It is a compelling blend because it acknowledges that ancient wisdom often held some deep ecological knowledge. Now, if we zoom out to the book's central premise, Middleton is arguing that rivers are literally the Earth's circulatory system.
I love that metaphor, the circulatory system.
Yeah.
It just instantly makes you think of constant vital movement, connectivity, and frankly, vulnerability. Mm-hmm. If the arteries clog, the whole system collapses.
That's it, exactly. The book describes the global river network as not just moving water, but circulating essential nutrients, sediments, life, and human cultures across continents. For thousands of years, they shaped where we settled, how we traded, even what we worshipped.
That's why he calls them the architects of civilization.
Right. The scope is just massive. The book takes you on this journey that starts so small, with a single drop of rain in a mountain headwater, and then it expands to the entire global network, showing how every single part is interconnected.
So we see rivers not as these passive channels, but as master sculptors.
Yes, relentlessly carving canyons, transporting material, building these vast, fertile deltas. So the book is, you know, it's both a scientific text and this urgent call to action.
Yeah.
It fundamentally challenges that purely utilitarian view, the idea that a river is just a resource to be dammed.
It demands that we treat them as complex, dynamic, living systems.
That's the core of it.
Okay, so let's get into the sculpting part. You mentioned fluvial geomorphology. This is the science of how rivers shape the land, and I guess it's the core function that makes everything else possible.
It is. If you want to understand a river, you have to understand its three main jobs: erosion, transport, and deposition.
Right. Think of it like a journey from the mountains down to the sea. In the steep, high-energy upper parts, the water's flowing fast, and its main job is erosion.
acting like a saw.
Exactly, like a powerful, relentless saw, just carving down into the bedrock, creating those steep, iconic V-shaped valleys.
Then as the slope gets gentler in the middle course, the river slows down a bit, and that vertical cutting power fades. The energy then shifts to transportation and sideways erosion.
Ah, and this is where you get those magnificent looping meanders.
Yes, the ones that snake across the floodplain, slowly migrating over time and eventually getting cut off to leave behind things like Oxbow Lakes.
Those crescent-shaped lakes, right. And then finally, in the lower course, as the river gets close to the ocean, the slope flattens completely. The energy just drops.
And its main job switches entirely to deposition. It just drops every last grain of sand and silt it's been carrying. It spreads out to build these massive, flat, fertile landscapes, estuaries and deltas.
And Middleton really helps us appreciate the sheer scale of this work, right? We're talking geological timescales.
Oh, absolutely. Think about the Colorado River carving the Grand Canyon. I mean, that wasn't a sudden event. That was millions of years of patient, steady work.
Or the Nile Delta, the cradle of ancient Egypt.
Mm.
It only exists because the river has been reliably moving sediment from the heart of Africa for millennia.
It's an astonishing force. It creates and destroys at the same time, all to build up these incredibly fertile lands.
And of course, that creation.
Yeah.
That's what draws people. This is where civilizations starts and where our history of trying to control it all begins.
Exactly. Early civilizations, Mesopotamia, the Indus Valley, ancient Egypt, they didn't just pop up randomly. They rose on these fertile, predictable floodplains. The rivers give them reliable water and, critically, that annual gift of nutrient-rich silt.
Which allowed for agriculture.
Right. It allowed people to stop being nomads and to settle down. It started as a genuinely symbiotic relationship.
But then we weren't satisfied with a natural rhythm, were we? We wanted certainty. We wanted constant power protection from floods. That's when the relationship became parasitic.
Yes, driven by this attempt to tame the flow with massive engineering projects. That era of hubris really defined the 20th century, symbolized by these colossal dams, the Hoover Dam, the Three Gorges Dam.
And while they provide power and irrigation, Middleton details these staggering unintended consequences.
And they are systemic. For example, a dam traps sediment. So the silt that was supposed to renew the delta at the river's mouth, it just never arrives.
So the deltas actually shrink.
They shrink and erode, becoming vulnerable to sea level rise. And at the same time, upstream, we block migratory fish, salmon, sturgeon, and just decimate their populations because they can't complete their life cycle.
It creates this illusion of control,
which Middleton stresses is always temporary. The river is infinitely more patient than our concrete. We impose this rigid control on a dynamic, chaotic system, and eventually the river just... it reasserts itself, often leading to even more catastrophic floods.
Wow. Okay, so beyond the engineering, the biodiversity story is crucial. A river is so much more than just a channel of water. It's a living corridor.
It is. A vibrant linear ecosystem. And Middleton emphasizes two vital concepts here. First, the importance of the riparian zone.
That's the lush strip of land right alongside the river.
Exactly. The trees, shrubs, soil. It's critical habitat, but ecologically, it acts as the liver of the watershed. It filters pollutants and stabilizes the banks before they reach the water.
And that second concept.
The river continuum concept, which basically means that life changes systematically as the river moves. The organisms in the cold, fast headwaters are totally different from those in the slow, murky mouth. River health is literally measured by the vitality of the life in that system.
Which brings us straight into the modern crisis, pollution.
It does. And Middleton neatly categorizes this damage. You have the relatively easy-to-spot point source pollution, a factory pipe, a sewage outlet.
But the truly insidious threat, I imagine, is the harder-to-control stuff.
The non-point source pollution, absolutely. We're talking about diffuse runoff, agricultural fertilizers washing off millions of acres of farmland, oil running off city streets after a rainstorm.
And that leads directly to things like eutrophication, right? These massive algal blooms that create dead zones.
Exactly. And this modern crisis just throws the cultural clash into sharp relief. Middleton highlights rivers like the Ganges in India. It's personified as the goddess Ganga Ma, revered as sacred water by hundreds of millions.
It's this deep accumulated wisdom about its life-sustaining importance.
It is, but it's a profound paradox. The river is culturally revered as life itself, yet it's one of the most physically sickened rivers in the world, choked by the exact modern industrial waste and population pressures that its spiritual purpose warns against.
The physical tragedy mirrors a societal breakdown.
It really does. And unfortunately, the 21st century is seeing rivers move onto the global political battleground. Two massive forces are driving this: growing populations and the destabilizing effects of climate change.
Climate change is a total river game changer. It's scrambling the whole water cycle, more extreme floods here, severe droughts there. And critically, it's threatening the mountain glaciers that feed so many of the world's most vital rivers.
Systems that hundreds of millions rely on, like the Indus or the Ganges.
And that scarcity, that's what fuels what he calls hydropolitics.
Yes, there are 263 river basins that cross international borders: the Nile, the Mekong, the Tigris-Euphrates. An upstream decision, like building a huge reservoir in Ethiopia, becomes an existential threat to downstream nations like Egypt. Water security is national security.
It makes the solid lines on our political maps seem completely artificial, disconnected from the fluid reality of the hydrological map.
And the ultimate tragic cautionary tale he uses is the Aral Sea disaster, the diversion of its two main rivers during the Soviet era for huge irrigation projects. It led to the virtual disappearance of the sea.
The consequences were catastrophic, weren't they?
Unbelievable. Toxic dust storms, fishing fleets stranded miles from water, widespread health crises. It shows exactly what happens when we assume technology gives us the right to push a river system past its breaking point.
So, having gone through the history, the geology, and this contemporary crisis, let's try to synthesize this. What are the core messages Middleton wants us to walk away with?
I think he offers four powerful interrelated themes. First, as we said, rivers as barometers of planetary health. They are incredibly sensitive indicators. If a river is sick, choked with plastic, or running dry, it's not a local problem.
It's a symptom of a much wider illness in the whole watershed.
The entire watershed, yeah. Second, he forces us to challenge our economic assumptions, the true cost of degradation. We consistently undervalue these systems. That short-term gain from industrial exploitation always results in far greater long-term costs.
We just push the bill to future generations.
We do. Third, our relationship history. It moved from symbiotic to parasitic. Our ancient societies adapted to the river's rhythm. Our industrial age tried to conquer it. So the health of our rivers is a direct reflection of the wisdom of our societies.
And finally, the essential message of hope, which is so important.
So important. The possibility of restoration and renewal. Despite all the damage, rivers have this remarkable resilience. He points to successes like the cleanup of the River Thames in London, once biologically dead, now supporting salmon again.
So it shows that sustained commitment can actually reverse the damage.
It absolutely can. And these big ideas are distilled into these lines that just, they stick with you.
Yeah, let's talk about a few of those. That circulatory analogy is unforgettable. Rivers are the arteries of the earth, carrying life itself across the landscape. It's such a concise way to emphasize that global, necessary connectivity.
It is. And then he challenges our technological arrogance with this one. The true measure of a civilization is not how much water it can control, but how well it can live within the natural rhythms of its rivers.
That's a powerful call for humility, isn't it? For adaptation instead of dominance.
It is, which falls right into the volatility of global politics. The political map of the world is drawn in solid artificial lines, but the hydrological map is a web of shared, flowing connections.
That perfectly captures the challenge of hydropolitics, that water diplomacy, not military strength, is what's going to define our future stability.
We are linked, whether we like it or not.
So for you, the listener, how can you apply this knowledge right now? I mean, it seems like it has to start small and local.
It does. Think about personal water stewardship. Be mindful of your virtual water footprint, the water embedded in your food, your clothes.
And be incredibly selective about what goes down your drain or on your lawn. That non-point source pollution we talked about, it starts at your front door.
Exactly. Second, become an informed citizen. The next time a proposal for a massive infrastructure project comes up in your region, a new dam, a new levee, evaluate it critically. Don't just look at the short-term gains.
Think about the long-term ecological costs, using the cautionary tales of the Colorado River or the Aral Sea as a guide.
And third, rethink local planning. Support local policies that work with the river, not against it. That means advocating for restoring those riparian buffers and wetlands, the natural filters, rather than building on floodplains.
Which just guarantees disaster down the line.
Middleton shows us we are not separate from these systems. Our health, our economy, our culture, it's all fundamentally intertwined with the health of our rivers.
You know, the most surprising thing I learned was that integration of sacred geography. The idea that spiritual reverence for rivers, the kind you find in indigenous cultures, wasn't just folklore. It was.
Yeah.
It was an embodiment of sophisticated, accumulated ecological wisdom about their vital role.
Recognizing that wisdom is key.
It's absolutely key to real stewardship.
For me, my final takeaway is the need for this fundamental shift in perception. Rivers are not an optional amenity. They're not just a resource to be managed. They are a requirement for planetary and human health. And that knowledge demands that we stop seeing the river as a thing to control and start seeing it as the living artery that sustains us all.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akashra Foundation.